Welcome back, fellow Front Stretch listeners, to the Front Stretch Podcast. My name is Matt Stalnick, and joined by me today is Mike Neff. And today we are going to bring you all of the action you missed over the past 2 weeks in our absence, and we apologize for that. We are now going to be going to a two-week format going forward, so you can expect that from now on. So, yeah, Mike, diving right in here, a lot of stuff happened yesterday at in New Hampshire. It was the most dramatic race that we've seen in at least a few weeks, at least in Darlington. And the whole field and the whole chase grid was pretty much turned on its head. The biggest story coming out of the race, in my opinion, and there was one other big story that we're going to get to later that was arguably just as big, but Kevin Harvick dominates the race, running out of fuel with two laps to go, and now is sitting 15th in the standings. He's had a disastrous challenger round to open this chase. He had everything that happened last week at Chicagoland with Jimmy Johnson cutting his tire down and the scuffle between the two of them. Where does Harvick stand now going into this final race in the challenger round here at Dover? Because he is facing elimination at this point, and if he ends up going out, that is one of the biggest heavy hitters coming into this chase that will no longer be chase eligible. So what's your immediate take on that?
Absolutely, although I wouldn't exactly call it a scuffle between Johnson and Harvick. A brush. But it's undoubtedly the biggest story of the chase. I mean, You're talking about the most dominant car of the season that arguably had one of the greatest seasons in NASCAR history. And he's going to be out after the first round. And it's all, and again, he's not totally out, but it's all self-induced.
It's completely self-induced.
At Chicago, there was zero reason for them to stay on the track. When that tire was rubbing, they should have immediately come into the pits. And how Roddy didn't call him in, I don't know. But then we go to New Hampshire, and I give them some credit on this one, because both teams, them and Kurt Busch, apparently had some kind of a fuel pickup problem.
Yeah.
Because both of them had calculations that said they were good 3 to 5 laps beyond the end of the race. Yep. And both of them ran out short. So there was something on their side that they have to diagnose at this point to figure out what went wrong. But both of them had actually made calculations and thought they were to the good, didn't even worry really about saving gas. So I don't know that it was still a gamble, and knowing where he was points-wise
exactly
coming into this past weekend, it's a pretty big gamble. But again, they felt confident that they had enough fuel, so I don't know how big of a gamble it was. But now, absolutely, they're on the outside looking in. They got one shot and one shot only, because they have to finish 23 spots ahead of three different drivers. I mean, you're talking Dale Jr., Kyle Busch, and Paul Menard all have to finish. I mean, even if he comes in second, they would have to finish 25th or worse, all three of them. And the odds of that are just minute, especially Kyle Busch finishing that far back. So
yeah, and that's another one that we missed. I mean, Kyle Busch, because of his misfortune and not a great run in Chicago, he's now on the outside looking in as well. He's only one
but
point
it's only
out.
By 1 point.
But,
and that's where the difference between Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch lies. Kyle Busch won 4 races. Harvick did not.
Yep.
And those second place finishes throughout the year, instead of converting 3 or 4 of those into wins, if he had done that, he's right where Kyle is, and he's racing his way in this weekend and doesn't feel that bad about it.
Yep.
But now with 23 points out, mind you, he came in second in the spring, and they feel confident about their car. I mean, and let's face it, they lost the spring race because a valve stem got knocked off. They've got a car for that track that I think will absolutely be in contention. But when you're in contention and you start feeling pressure of do or die, it makes it a little different. And we've already seen that even without do or die pressure, they've made some bad calls. So it's going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, first of all, let me just say that I think this is such an awesome story to go into Dover with. I mean, Dover is not generally an exciting track. This particular race last year didn't really have a lot of drama going in, simply because all of the guys that we thought would advance coming out of Dover went into that race pretty much good to go. I mean, we all Almirola, Allmendinger, and I, the other two who didn't advance out of that. I think it was Kurt Busch and Casey Kane, maybe. No, not Casey Kane. Anyway, the four who didn't end up advancing out of that race were the four who were expected to not make the contender round. So that race didn't have much drama. But going into this, I mean, this is, from a dramatic perspective, it's going to be really fun to watch. I mean, you have conceivably four guys, in my opinion. Harvick, who is out right now. Kyle Busch, who is out right now. Junior is on the bubble spot. And then you have Gordon sitting in 10th. You got four guys who are major, major names and we're all kind of expected to do at least something. And this chase could all possibly, at least half of them might face elimination. So
absolutely,
that is going to make Sunday's race a must-see TV, at least from my perspective. So I'll say that that's going to be really fun to watch. And I personally, I'll also lead by saying, I think Harvick's going to win the race. I see that happening. I think just watching how that this team stepped up in the chase last year, all season long, they were kind of hit and miss as to whether or not they could close races out. But once they got to the chase, and the races where they had to step up, Phoenix, Homestead, they stepped up. And knowing Harvick and how he is as a competitor, I see this just driving that team forward. And I think if they do win this race, it could make them that much more dangerous going through the chase because they overcame so much adversity early on. But that being said, looking at this as a, you know, people are going to have obviously been making comments about, you know, the validity of the chase now because of this. And the most important thing that we need to say as far as Harvick is concerned is this is self-induced. This is absolutely not, this is not, you know, oh, boo-hoo for the number four team if they don't make it. If they don't make it.
Yeah, this is not Kyle Busch getting rear-ended at Talladega.
Right,
this
exactly.
This is their own fault.
This is completely the number four team's fault on two fronts. You know, everyone likes to say, oh, the regular season doesn't matter. But that number four team should have won about four more races this year, undoubtedly. They should have entered the chase with a solid six or seven wins. And they left four wins on the table. And that's been a problem for the number four team since they formed, is that, you know, they can put it together when it counts, but, you know, on those stretch runs of the season, they aren't always great when it comes to closing things out. They're prone to weird mistakes late in races, and they have all the speed in the world, and all that speed is what led them to the championship last year. But they made a lot of mistakes along the way, and they have again this year too. It's pretty much the same kind of deal. I mean, they were a little bit more consistent throughout the regular season. But to your point, if they put wins on the board instead of second place finishes in three or four of those races, Harvick's in good shape.
Yep.
So,
and the thing I'm curious about as we get in, and I don't think Harvick's going to win this because Jimmy Johnson owns Dover. And the thing that I find so intriguing about this is you have a legitimate opportunity here for somebody who should be at least in contention for the final four. I don't know that he's that strong because they've kind of stumbled into the chase.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Johnson has the ability to knock out
exactly
a strong contender. So this is the first time. Last year we didn't have this, at least not this early.
Yep.
To where they can actually make a statement towards the championship by defeating Harvick and knocking him out of the next round.
Yeah, and that's something I actually do have a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot I don't like about, you know, the new chase format. We've gone over that. But this is one of the things I think is really cool about it, because you have guys now like Kenseth and Hamlin especially, who, yeah, they haven't really, either one of them, been great at Dover. Kenseth was back during his Roush years. And Johnson is obviously in this conversation as well. But Johnson still has, you know, some degree of pressure to at least deliver a good points day just to make sure he doesn't fall out. That would be pretty inconceivable if it happened. But Kenseth and Hamlin are guys I look at because they have those wins. They have nothing that they need to race for other than to knock Harvick out. That should literally be their main objective at Dover on Sunday, is to make sure Kevin Harvick stays out of victory lane. And I think that's just such an intriguing storyline coming into this race. And another thing that makes you almost wonder is, I wonder if they would be trying to help out Kyle Busch throughout this race. That's something I think that's going to bear watching. I mean, Busch is sitting there on the bubble spot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'll wrap it up by saying that no matter what happens to that number four team, if they do not advance, sorry, That's how that's the playoffs. It's your it's how you know it's no that is no different in my view than a number one seed in the NCAA tournament getting knocked out of the second round because they just they put up a goose egg in, you know, a game when they should have won. And that this
did
is
not
this
perform when it was on the line.
Yeah, I mean that's what this is about. And it's a paradigm shift for NASCAR, but it's totally fair. And especially if that team does not come out with a top five run, even you could, even under the old Chase format by this point, they'd be probably done. That's another thing people would probably forget about. They'd be sitting under the old Chase format. I'm pretty sure they'd be dead last in this chase. And if they didn't win on at Dover on Sunday, even under the old format, I would probably, in Brad Doherty's words, put a fork in them. So really interesting to watch. I think that's obviously going to be the biggest story in Dover is who is able to advance and if Harvick is able to win. And that kind of leads me to my second point. We have a solid, I will say about, it could be as many as seven guys really fighting for those final kind of four spots in the chase for the next round. Who do you see advancing? Because you have Earnhardt Jr. sitting at 12th. He's only a point ahead of Busch, who's in 13th. Jeff Gordon sitting in 10th. I believe I need to look up my points report here. You got Ryan Newman, who hasn't been running that well. I think he's like 7th or 8th. I could conceivably see him falling out. Oh, you got McMurray, who's 10 points ahead of Earnhardt Jr. He's sitting in 11th. He hasn't been running particularly well either. This could go any number of ways here. And how do you sort of see this playing out realistically? Who do you see not advancing?
I mean, I think Kyle Busch gets in. I just can't picture him not getting in. But with that said, if Harvick is able to pull off the win, it could be hard for Busch to advance because not only would he have to leapfrog Earnhardt, but he would have to leapfrog McMurray. And that's where, I think McMurray and Earnhardt are in play for the final four spots, or final two spots. You got four people, Menard, Busch, Earnhardt, and McMurray, that are basically battling for these two spots. And then should Harvick win, you end up having three people battling, or three people on the outside for that one spot. So
yeah.
I honestly don't think Harvick wins, and I don't think he's going to point his way in. So I'm thinking that Kyle Busch will leapfrog Earnhardt, but I honestly think McMurray drops out and it ends up being Busch and Earnhardt that slot into those last two spots.
Yeah, and like, we also can't rule out something crazy happening because I don't think anyone saw Kyle Busch going to be in this position. But, I mean, that one cut tire killed him, and he didn't have a great run in Chicago. So now he's sitting on the outside looking in, and because everyone else has been great. Kenseth and Hamlin have been on fire. Carl Edwards has been great week to week. Logano and Johnson have been taking care of business. Kurt Busch and Keselowski have been, you know, good to great, depending on, you know, points of the race. Ryan Newman, once again, has just doing what he has to do. He's sitting in sixth right now. Newman is one that I would worry about, though. I mean, he's only 20. He's 25 points to the good, but just the way that team is, I could still easily see them just maybe putting in a stinker of a day. I don't know. I just they're probably good enough to probably advance in terms of points, but I could still see someone like a Newman or a Truex that just they're out to lunch, you know, and then they end up falling out. It could happen, but it would likely take a tire going down or something, but you can't really predict that. So I will say, nope. I think Earnhardt's going to advance. He's been running well enough, and he runs decent enough at Dover where I think he should be okay. McMurray, I definitely don't see advancing. I think he's pretty much done. Gordon, I think, will be okay. It's going to come down, I think, to Busch and Harvick. And there is a chance that Busch and Harvick could be fighting for both the win in the race and a spot in the next round. That's completely conceivable. And if that actually does happen, that will be a heck of a story. Because the way it would probably end up working is Earnhardt Jr. would leave Frog McMurray for the 11th spot, which would leave the 12th advancement spot to either McMurray, if he could point his way in, or Kyle Busch or Harvick if, you know, one of them is able to win. So real interesting. It's going to be a heck of a race on Sunday. I mean, whether or not whether it's a boring race or not, from a racing perspective, there's going to be enough points drama going on that's going to make this one probably pretty intriguing from start to finish. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see how this plays out.
Don't forget, Paul Menard finished in the top 10 in the spring. It's not out of the realm of possibilities for him to slide on in there either. But the thing that I would like to see, and you know, we always have the debate that we don't ever want to see wrecks. We want to see good racing. But it would be really nice to see the monster rear its head, because it hasn't in 3 or 4 years.
That's a very
and good have point. One of those Talladega pileups coming out of turn two that has 6 or 7 of these guys get caught in it.
Oh, that would.
And then you have a whole deal going on. It's kind of like I had thrown this out last year when we went to Homestead, that it would be awesome to see qualifying get rained out. The top 4 guys start on the first 2 rows, going to turn 1, somebody blows a tire, and all 4 of them get into a wreck, and we spend the whole race watching them in the garage rebuilding the cars. The same thing would be cool here if we had one of those Talladega-type wad-ups coming out of 2 on lap, you know, a lap 20 restart, and 5 guys, including McMurray, Gordon, Earnhardt, Menard, and Busch, are all involved. And we end up seeing who can get their car repaired, and we end up having a battle of guys that are 35 laps down racing with each other, and we're paying attention to that. That would be classic.
I think I would accept that in this case, but I would probably put a knife in my eye if that happened in the Homestead race. That would make me very angry. That would have made me angry even if, like, do you remember, obviously, like the Stewart Edwards year where they went right down to the wire? If that would have even happened that year, I would have literally wanted to put a stake inside of my eye. Or even like 2002 when there was like 5 guys battling for the championship. If that ever happened in a championship race, I would be upset regardless of the points format. But yeah, if that happened at Dover, that'd be kind of funny.
It'd be interesting.
That'd be definitely interesting. It would put the crews in the spotlight for sure. But we brought up this next name earlier. And it's been an ongoing controversy in NASCAR. But late in the race, for anyone who missed it, Brad Keselowski was running second. Greg Biffle was leading, and Biffle laid back a little bit on the restart. He kind of spun his tires, and Keselowski jumped him in the restart box. But Biffle actually still beat him off the line and ended up getting the lead. So hopefully that kind of paints a picture of what happened. Keselowski ended up being penalized for jumping the restart. And where we're standing now, NASCAR has put itself in quite a box now going forward. They finally stepped up and issued a penalty on a call that was, I think we can both agree, was very questionable, to say the least. And where do you think this is going to leave us now for the chase? I need your take on the call itself, and where do you think it's headed from here?
The call, I thought, was unnecessary.
Completely.
Simply from the perspective that Keselowski didn't gain an advantage. Had Keselowski come through 1 and 2 and been in the lead, then I would completely be on board with the call. But the fact that, and whether he gave the spot back or simply got beat through 1 and 2 is irrelevant. By the time they got to the end of the backstretch, Greg Biffle had the lead. Keselowski was in second. There was no benefit to the fact that he fired slightly early.
Yeah.
Last week, when Jeff Gordon was long gone by the time they got to turns 1 and 2, is when they should have made that call. So now, as you say, they have painted themselves into a box, because the way this has always worked in racing in the past, if you did jump it, as long as you gave the spot back, it was no harm, no foul. Now NASCAR has painted themselves into this box that if you go early, you're done. Whether you give the spot back or not, it is a violation and they have to black flag you. And if they don't, then we have this enormous debate that will rage on for the following week, because they've set a precedent. So yeah. I feel it's unfortunate that they chose to do it when they did. They needed to, and I'm glad they made a call. I just felt like the time that they chose to make the call was not appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, I think NASCAR would have been better off leaving that as a no call, waiting and then waiting for an opportunity when there was a clear one, you know, similar to the Richmond incident with Kenseth. If you get that again, make the call. But when you get a really ticky-tacky one...
The problem with Richmond is Kenseth was the leader.
Yeah.
So then that's where it's a whole different angle, because Keselowski was not the leader, and that's why they're calling him on it. Kenseth was the leader at Richmond, so I don't know if you pull that one. But Gordon at Chicago was the one that I think is just obvious, because he was the second-place car, and he was long gone by the time they got to turn one.
Yeah, so now it becomes NASCAR has to basically make a ball and strike call over whether or not the leader spun his tires. Now, yeah. I guess in this case, in their estimation, they didn't feel that Biffle spun his tires. From the TV camera, I couldn't really tell. It almost looked like he laid back a little bit. So that one's tough, but you're making a ball and strike call, and they are not very good at making ball and strike calls, as we've seen with the debris cautions. They are not, it is not their expertise. I mean, I am in the camp that the debris cautions are sincere, but they are very much poor balls and strike calls quite a bit. And whether or not, no matter how you interpret how these calls are made, if it's a bad call, it's a bad call. It was a bad call on Sunday. And if it happens again late into the chase when these races matter even more, it's going to be an even bigger controversy, and NASCAR could end up with a pile of crap on its hands. And none of us want that. So
nope.
It'll be intriguing from now going forward to see how they officiate that. And they got to stay consistent. I mean, if that's going to be the precedent that you're going to set, you need to be calling that every time now until they stop doing it. And then I can respect that. If that's actually how they're going to officiate it, you got to call it every time. It's going to be
absolutely.
It's going to be difficult, though. So
yeah, the problem will be if we go to Dover and we have a situation just like we had this weekend and they don't call it, then it's just a whole Pandora's box.
Yeah, and that's not a box that that needs to be open. And the crazy thing about Dover is that is a prime track for people spinning their tires on restarts. Prime.
Yep.
I would venture to say that might be the biggest one, next to maybe Atlanta. So I hope we don't see the issue come up again, but unfortunately with the way this season's been going, I have a feeling it will come up once again. So the final topic that I want to get to for today, and this is one that we're basically sitting on until Wednesday, but Tony Stewart, sources are all saying Stewart's going to be done after 2016. Clint Bowyer will eventually take over that car, according to sources. It's really, we've all kind of known that this was probably going to happen, so it's kind of almost be a formality at this point if this is indeed what gets announced on Wednesday. What's your take on it, Mike? Where does this leave Smoke going forward? Like, how do you see this unfolding?
And Jenna Fryer wrote a column on it today that made a lot of sense.
Great column.
And I kind of understand it, but at the same time, and maybe it's because I'm a Stewart fan, I don't want to buy it. I understand, as she stated, NASCAR was his job, racing short tracks and working at Eldora and running his sprint series was his passion.
Yeah, and that's always been that way.
He's at a point now, and I don't know that he had the forethought, he may have, that he laid out a plan to know how long he had to run in NASCAR in order to spend his twilight years chasing his passion. And, you know, events of the last year or two may have played into this. And she makes it out that free agency and how that was playing out was going to make the decision for him, which is why he's going with Bowyer. And her point was he might have actually wanted Larson, which would make more sense as well. But I just, part of me feels like it's because he's running so bad this year was kind of the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
I feel like that he's looking at it, that he's doing a Darrell Waltrip where he's out there just logging laps. He's only led 24 laps all season. He hasn't had a top five and he's just feeling not competitive. But I feel like And again, it may be selfish, but I feel like next year the low downforce package is going to play into his hands. And I feel like he's going to get back to the smoke that we're all used to, seeing him contending and seeing him back up running for a championship. And I hate that he's probably going to announce this deal and then turn around and contend for a championship and be in a box because he committed to retiring. So I'm willing to bet this is what's going to happen. He's going to say he's going to retire, and he's going to do that, and Bowyer's going to move into the car. But I kind of feel like if he gave it one more year, see how the new low downforce package worked out before he committed to this, he might stick around for another 4 or 5 years, which, of course, we would all like to see.
Yeah, I mean, we'd all obviously like to have seen Tony Stewart stick it out for as long as he possibly could. He is an ephemeral personality in the sport. And I think, and this is something that was brought up in the Fryer piece that I thought was, like, by the way, if any of you guys get a chance to read that, it was a fantastic piece. This was never Tony Stewart's love. From the day that Tony Stewart stepped inside of a stock car, it's very clear that his passion was always a mixture of sorts of dirt racing and an IndyCar racing, really. And that's a completely different debate as far as the IndyCar side of it. But NASCAR, it was always a job for him. You know, when it was good, I think Stewart enjoyed being in the sport. And I think when things weren't going so well, it was a bit of a job for him. I mean, we all know how that is. And you do things in life that may not be your favorite thing to do, but they pay the bills. And it's kind of silly to say that, you know, driving a NASCAR could be like that. But, you know, when you grow up liking other forms of racing and you still have a passion for those other forms of racing, it's understandable. So Stewart never struck me as a guy that really loved NASCAR. You know, it's not like you listen to him talk and it's always kind of seen this way. I mean, you hear a guy like Carl Edwards talk or Denny Hamlin, or especially Dale Earnhardt Jr. Those guys really love NASCAR racing. Whereas, you know, with Stewart, I believe a lot of the stuff that was in the story. I think he had a countdown. I think he enjoyed the racing to a point. But it's very clear when you hear some of his rants that this is not, you know, his ideal form of racing. And I think the past events of 2014 and 2013 really put a strain on his desire to continue doing this. And I think this year's struggles were really just a final shot in the, you know, final shot, so to speak. So it's tough. I don't know if I see him having the same level of success next year with a low downforce package, simply because he wasn't very impressive in the two races with the low downforce this year. I think it's really just come down to the fact that his heart's just not in it anymore. I think he's still a great driver. I think he could still do great things in other forms of racing, but I think this particular sport, he's fallen behind a bit. And when you don't have that passion to stay up on it, it's very easy to fall behind.
The one thing I hope comes out of this is I hope he gets another shot at Indianapolis.
I would love to see that.
I hope in 2017 somebody gives him a shot, because what he's always said is if he was going to go back and do it, he wanted to be able to spend the whole month there.
Yeah.
And I think if somebody gives him a shot to where he could spend the whole month there, it would be really cool. And part of that, I think, could be too because of the success Kurt had when he did it. I think seeing that success makes Tony realize that he may still have a shot at it. So at least I hope that's the case. I hope he gets another one, because that's the one thing, well, one of two things. He hasn't won a Daytona 500 either, but
I think he wants that bad.
Yeah, everything that everybody's saying is he's going to retire from full-time competition. So I think even if he quits, he may still do the Michael Waltrip and come back and run some plate races, although I don't know that plate racing's his favorite thing, but I know
I was going to say, I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, I know he wants to win that Daytona 500, so he may come back for that. But I really hope he gets a shot at Indy again, because we all know how much that race would mean for him to win.
Yeah, I mean, I am very much on board with that. As someone who is a big, big, big fan of both the Indianapolis 500, the Daytona 500, specifically and outside of the scope of the rest of the sport, But those massive, massive events in racing are what I kind of live for. And it would be amazing to see him just, do Indy again, and B, take another couple cracks at the Daytona 500. Because I personally think he has the chops where if his passion is there, he could easily win both of those races.
Yep.
I really do believe that. And I think with the 500 next year is going to be his last. That's kind of where I see this going. I don't necessarily think he's going to light the world on fire next year. I do think he'll be better next year. I think he could make the chase next year, but I don't see him really contending for the championship. I do think he's going to put a lot of himself into the Daytona 500, though. And I think that's going to be a bigger story next year at Daytona than Gordon's final 500 was. Because with Gordon's, there was kind of just like, okay, he's finally, you know, he's had an amazing career. It just seemed right when Gordon hung it up. But with Stewart, there just feels like there's so much unfinished business. And it's more of a somber tone. Stewart's is going to feel more like a retirement tour, I think. And I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. I mean that, and it's going to, man, he's, you know, he's finally done.
And the other thing about this whole deal, we're going to be losing two large fan bases in back-to-back years. Because you put Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart fans out to pasture, I don't know that, I think there's going to be a decent crossover to Chase Elliott. I mean, he has a large following just from being Bill's son. So I think there's going to be some crossover there along with the fans he's got from Bill. But I don't know that Tony Stewart fans are going to gravitate to anybody.
I think if Larson would have came in.
Fan bases, and then Dale Earnhardt's probably going to be gone in the next 5 years, that you're going to lose a bunch of fans in the next 5 years.
Well, that's something I've actually been discussing with some friends of mine privately, and it's something that a lot of them have brought up, you know, knowing kind of what I do here, and that I kind of obviously, as someone who analyzes the sport, I have a duty to kind of obviously stay up on what the state of the sport is. And a lot of people have been asking me, they're like, you know, what do you see happening now that at least two that we know of right now of the biggest names in the sport are going to be done after 2016. And it's a scary proposition, but a couple things that I think you have to look at. If you look at the races that Tony Stewart missed in 2013 and 2014, the rate, you know, ratings and attendance and all that stuff stayed fine relative to what they were pretty much the year before. Same thing with when Dale Earnhardt Jr. missed a couple races. I do, to a certain point, want to believe that the sport is bigger than any one personality. I think that's true to a point.
Right.
Are we going to lose fans over this? I think there's going to be some lost fans, but I think that the people that watch every week are the kind of people who will eventually find just a new driver. The people who I think stopped following completely were already the ones who were down to maybe a couple races a year, or that's just what they always were. They only kind of followed maybe what Gordon and Stewart were doing. I don't know. That's a really tough question.
And, yeah, we'll have to see. I feel like based on comments that I get on columns and discussions I have with fans, I've heard from a lot of Gordon fans that have said they're only hanging on to this year to see him quit and that they're not coming back. And we'll see. It'll speak out in the numbers for sure. So
I mean, I always take those kind of comments with a grain of salt just because, you know, you and I both know how people who come, we know how that is. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, my take on it is that if you enjoy racing, if you're the kind of person who enjoys racing, and Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart fans are, you might step away from the sport for a little bit, but it'll eventually get you back. You'll eventually see a highlight or something if you haven't been following it for a while. And if you're truly someone that likes racing, you'll eventually come back to it. And then, hey, if you've really lost your interest in racing, then, yeah, you'll probably eventually stop following. But racing fans who are fans of those two drivers, I think even if there's a lag period where they stop watching for a little bit, I think they'll eventually bounce back. The biggest thing that NASCAR needs now is to not focus on the fans you've lost. The key is to cultivate some new personalities. And we desperately, I could put the word desperately in there five, six more times after that. We need a young superstar. It's not up for debate at this point. We need,
I think we've got young superstars.
We need one
I
that hits immediately.
We need to have races at different places.
Yeah.
I think that's the greater thing. If we got trucks back to local short tracks and had Daniel Hemric and Eric Jones and Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott, for that matter, out at these smaller venues where people would come that don't go to NASCAR Cup weekends, it would help cultivate that new fan base.
I think that would, yeah, I mean, I think that would definitely help. I mean, just looking through the history of the sport and the guys who have really been able to connect, the one situation that really stands out to me was when Trevor Bayne won the Daytona 500 in 2011. That was the first time in a long time that, the sad thing is that it didn't even end up panning out, and I'll get to that in a second. But for that year, 2011, Trevor Bayne had the potential to be a superstar. Him winning the Daytona 500 in the manner that he did connected him with so many people. It was Bainemania. We all remember that.
Yep.
And ESPN, the big media outlets, they picked up on it. They spread the story. They helped build this mythos around this new superstar. But it was unfortunate because Bain didn't have a full-time ride that year, and he's kind of ended up being a bit of a disappointment in terms of, you know, he was kind of a one-race wonder, so to speak. And I also think that some of his health issues have played into that, but that's a story for another day. We need somebody who kind of is unknown outside of racing circles, maybe an Eric Jones, a Ryan Blaney, someone who the ESPN crowd doesn't know that well, to win a big race immediately off the bat and sustain the success. You literally need somebody like, or even a Chase Elliott. Chase has a shot next year to become a superstar off the bat, because my philosophy when it comes to at least NASCAR drivers is that you can become a superstar if you light the world on fire in year one or two. Like, Joey Logano, as much of a star as he has become, he doesn't have that kind of superstar kind of flair to his fan base because it took so long for him to get to where he is. By all accounts, Joey Logano should be a superstar. He should be featured on – he's young. He's extremely successful, and personally, I think he's going to win 4 or 5 championships in the sport. Yet he doesn't have that mythos around him because it took him so long to get to where he is. So, and the same thing is about to happen with Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson's going to break out in year 4 or 5, but he's not going to have that superstar flair to him because it took him so long. So,
well, and I think you got a year left on that.
Maybe a year.
I think
I'll give you that.
Next year, if Kyle Larson wins 4 or 5 races, I think the possibility is still there. But if he doesn't win a bunch next year and truly contend for a championship, then I'm with you. I think he'll be in that same category.
Yeah, and I do think that there is some potential for Logano if he wins this championship this year and the Daytona. That's a missing story, by the way, I think, for NASCAR and for NASCAR's PR team. They missed that one. A young guy, a superstar in this sport who is going to be a championship contender and won the Daytona 500 in the same season. They missed that one, personally. But that's, again, that's a story for another day. But like I said, and I'll end it with this, is that we have some great stars coming up. Ryan Blaney is going to do great things. Chase Elliott has a cult of personality already around him where he could do some big stuff. One of those two needs to be really successful off the bat. And I know that's a lot of pressure to put on these guys, but sports is coming to a bit of a crossroads. And I think I'm an optimist. I think that we're going to be all right because of X, Y, and Z. We got the low down force package coming. I see good things in the future, but we need a couple transcendent stars, because the ones that we have right now are either aging, like Dale Jr. and Jimmy Johnson, are not living up to what they kind of could have been, which I would throw Brad Keselowski and Logano into the mix. And I don't necessarily mean from an on-track perspective. I mean from more of just like their ability to drum up interest kind of perspective. And, you know, one other name that I would look to is Darrell Wallace Jr. Because I'm telling you, man, if he ever catches on and he ever really starts to explode on the track, that's a crossover story waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it needs to happen in the Daytona 500, personally. I think that's the one race where it – or in the chase, one of those two things where someone needs to just completely break out. We'll see what happens. I mean, Danica, that's a lost cause at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I have high hopes for some of these guys coming up. I think there's a couple that can do it, but it's going to have to be immediate because we can't just have the old guard winning every single year again and again and again.
Yeah, and the one other one that I think could really be a great story, the problem is I don't think he's going to get a shot on the Cup side in quality equipment, is going to be Daniel Hemric. I really think if Hemric could get a ride in quality equipment, I think he could come out and win a bunch of races because what he's doing right now in that stuff that he's running in trucks,
yeah, I agree,
is amazing. I mean, the fact that he outran Austin Dillon at Eldora is still one of the most amazing stories. Had it not been for Bobby Pierce, that would have been the story of the weekend. But unfortunately, I just don't think, because he doesn't bring the money, I don't think he's going to get that kind of a quality ride in Cup right off the bat. He may get a ride and do the Logano thing where he struggles along and eventually gets a good ride. But I'm with you. I don't think if he could get one, I think it would be a huge story because I think he'd win right off the bat. But I just don't think he's going to get that shot because he doesn't bring money.
Yeah, and that's another thing that's going to be really upsetting is, you know, there's a lot of really good guys down in the Xfinity and truck ranks that are just never going to get the chance that they deserve to be a breakout star. And, you know, we'll see. If I had to forecast right now, I think if you put Eric Jones in a Cup car, I think he has the chops to, at least from an on-track perspective, deliver results immediately.
Yep.
Now, there's aspects of him that I think it could make him have some crossover appeal. He's young. He's a decent-looking kid. He's almost got this arrogance about him that I think could actually play to his favor. I don't know. He could be an interesting story. I think, like I said, Chase Elliott, there's a lot there. We'll see what happens, but it's going to have to happen quickly or else it's going to be a slow recovery mode for the sport. We're already kind of entering a recovery phase, I think, with the low downforce package and some other stuff that NASCAR is doing, but it's going to be another setback with Gordon and Stewart out, and we need stars to develop, and we don't have them right now. So we'll see what happens, and we'll just have to go from there.
Yep.
But other than that, Dover this weekend, race starts at 1:30, coverage starts at 1:30. Mike Neff, I'm Matt Stalnick. We are signing off. We'll see you in 2 weeks, folks.
Peace out.
Bye-bye.